And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. But Dave, this week, the nation finished 250 years since the Declaration of Independence was signed. Of course, it was approved July 2nd, but it wasn't issued publicly until July 4th.
That is correct. And it wasn't finished being signed till sometimes.
And not everybody, and the signatories were secret, many of them, because they didn't want to get arrested.
They didn't want to get hanged for treason.
Exactly. Exactly. This was a tough situation back 250 years and a couple of days ago.
Well, remember the last sentence of the Declaration. We pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Right.
They knew their lives were on the line.
Right. The key thing about this celebration, is that reactionaries always claim that what we're celebrating is the inheritance of these wonderful rights. But the truth is, the rights that we have always been fought for and won. And they have to, you have to keep fighting to keep them. And you have to fight to extend them. Your rights, your liberties, your freedoms, all the freedoms that we take, if we do take them for granted, were not part of the original deal. The original deal was independence from Britain, but it didn't include women as citizens. It didn't include the bulk of the working class, which were slaves and from Africa. It didn't include white people who didn't have property, white men, that is, who didn't have property. It was a tiny group of people.
Didn't include the natives.
Didn't include them at all, exactly. And all the rights that we have, whether it's the right to grant women suffrage, to grant them citizenship, because, you know, up until the 20th century, women couldn't have the bank account in their own name. They couldn't have insurance in their own name. They couldn't inherit themselves. They couldn't be part of government. They couldn't serve on juries. It's not just the right to vote. They weren't citizens. And the struggle to emancipate the slaves, which was meant really basically emancipating the working class from slavery, caused a new revolution, a new Declaration of Independence. Lincoln is the founder of the current United States, not Washington. So it's an interesting story. It's an interesting history, and it's a contentious one. And the reactionaries will always claim that none of that happened, and the Trump administration is busy making sure that their exhibits and the museums and also the school history textbooks don't teach the fact that the liberties that we have, the freedoms that we have, we fought for and we won them. And the ones we didn't win, we're still fighting for. We got nothing for granted. Nothing can be taken for granted.
Well, it's not just the Trump administration. It's his acolytes and enablers in the Republican Party, in the Congress, and in the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
And the other courts.
That's right.
They have that. You know, you mentioned Lincoln this week, also the anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg.
Right.
And you wonder, you know, how much blood was shed by people who wanted to maintain slavery.
Right.
And to truncate the rights of people. You noticed that Lincoln, or you noted that Lincoln changed the perspective on what our country stands for. But this week we had these Supreme Court rulings. And if you read one of the opinions, the concurring opinion by Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson on the birthright case, she didn't mince words about what was at stake in that case, not just the birthright, but the entire philosophy of citizenship and who would be allowed to have a role or play a role in our politics and our nation. Essentially, you've heard me say that the Supreme Court wants to go back to Plessy versus Ferguson. She said they want to go back to Dred Scott in some ways, in the way that they will disenfranchise people from their rights as Americans. The vote on that citizenship case, the Barber case out of that case, the Barber case was the mail-in voting case, but the vote was not really 6-3. It was 5-4 on the issue of whether it was constitutionally protected. Justice Kavanaugh took great pains to concur separately, but only to the extent that the citizenship was a matter of statute and not constitutional rights.
Which means that the Congress could get rid of it.
Well, they could, yeah. maybe. I mean, if it's a constitutional right, then the statutes don't matter.
No, but if Kavanaugh is right, it does matter.
That's correct. And you just need one more vote on the Supreme Court to do that.
Yep.
Should there be a majority vote in Congress? So that was, a very important case, but it's disheartening that it was even that close. And it shouldn't have been that close. Justice, give him some credit here. Chief Justice Roberts didn't buy into those theories. And he spent a lot of time, in his opinion, debunking them and saying that the words are pretty clear in their meaning. And if you remember in the argument where John Sauer, the lawyer for the administration trying to overturn birthright citizenship, was going into all these possibilities and that there was never a contemplation of people coming here and illegally, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Justice Roberts said, yeah, but it's still the same old Constitution.
Right.
Which is there, but it could come up again. It could come up again.
Oh, I'm sure it will come up again. Why would, these people aren't going away.
Well, I keep saying, remember my rules that I haven't talked about in a long time, but rule number one is think long term.
Yeah.
And they always do. And then number two is ideas matter. And these are ideas that they brought up that weren't anywhere near the mainstream ideas. These ideas of a unitary executive, that kind of thing that came up in the Slaughter case about the ability of the president to hire and fire people. These are really fairly new ideas developed in think tanks. And that's part of the process. And then my other rules is to always attack. They always keep going at it and going at it. They're never dissuaded, from what have you. We can talk about the mail-in vote case. We can talk about the case about government agencies. But I did want to note in those, if you remember, the last set of justices that were approved by Congress, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett, they all sat there and talked about stare decisis, established law, precedents, decided law, and how you don't overturn those things. And then they've precisely done just the opposite. They did that with the Dobbs decision, overturning Roe v. Wade. And in the Slaughter decision, they overturned almost a century of law about the president. And interestingly, although the conservatives or the MAGA people are celebrating that, a lot of businesses aren't, because Now you're creating laws or regulations that are only good as long as the president's in power, 4 years or 8 years. You know, the next president comes in and says, all you guys are fired. I'm putting in a new board that thinks differently, and they'll put in new rules and regulations. And it's not just these boards where they'll, you know, that you have 3-2 majorities. They're going to be, you know, they're just going to sweep everybody. It's going to be all or nothing boards.
The theory of executive unitary executive makes a lot of sense for people who don't believe in democracy. You know, I mean, why should the legislature, which is the direct representative of the voter, have more power than the president, who at best is an indirect representative of the voter? Because it's a representative who could get elected without much money, but with people on the ground working for her or him as a candidate. But the guy running, or the woman running for president, has to, well, in the last election, they had to raise $1 billion. I mean, that's a completely different story, right?
Yeah. Well, it's easy when someone will give you $250,000 to start with.
Yeah.
$250,000 to start with, like Elon Musk or the Adelsons or,
yeah,
or you know, whatever.
And but the Supreme Court made it easier by saying
yes. That
they took out, really, they got rid of any restrictions on the private,
right,
on the buying of elections.
Right. Money is speech, and it's been that way for a while. So, you know, anybody is free to speak, to donate their $1 million or their $100 million or their $1 billion. See, everybody's equal.
Everybody's equal. That's right.
Everybody's equal, you know.
And I'm writing my check for $250 million right now.
Oh, good.
Right. Good. I'm equal to Elon Musk.
I could write the check, yeah.
My check is not equal, but I am.
that's it. But we were getting back to the unitary executive, and, you know, read the body of the Declaration of Independence. That's what Jefferson indicted the King of England for. Right. He defined it as tyranny.
Right.
He defined it as tyranny, you know. You know, and somebody I read this week, you know, kind of paraphrased all the stuff, all the indictments about Trump. You know, he's engaged in corrupt schemes to profit from his office. He's desecrated the people's house and the nation's capital. He's perverted justice to take revenge on his enemies. He has vandalized the federal government, replacing experienced professionals with incompetent sycophants. He's deployed a domestic army to terrorize and torture. He's shredded aid for those most in need. He's betrayed our nation's allies. He's committed war crimes. You know, that's the modern day body of the Declaration of Independence.
That's right. That's right. That's how we should celebrate it. That's what should be read out on every radio station.
Yeah.
Because we live in the present. We don't live in the past.
No.
If we want to celebrate the founding of the country, what we want to celebrate is the spirit of willing to fight for freedom. Now, those people who did it were handicapped by blinkered views. They were handicapped by their prejudices. They were handicapped by the fact that the leaders of it were themselves big oppressors. They didn't want to be oppressed themselves, but they had no objection to oppressing others, and they did. But they fought anyway. And then if you want to take a positive example from that struggle, the example is fighting. Fighting. And the people who want to bring us back to that era, whether, as Ketanji Brown Jackson says, it's the Dred Scott era, or even to the founding era, I don't think anybody alive today would want to put up with that.
No.
Don't forget, that was a way of life in which people died at the age of 33, that or 34. That was the life expectancy. There was no medicine. There was no science. There was no upward mobility. There was only downward mobility. There was it was a miserable life. The Industrial Revolution and the fight for democratic rights and freedoms transformed it into a good life, or a potentially good life. We get closer to being human and we get further away from being animals.
Yeah, I was having a discussion with a lawyer here in the office, and I noted with the New Deal changed the whole concept of government, that government could actually help make your life easier or better, as opposed to standing aside and saying we're all on our own.
And that's what the New Deal brought about, that concept, right?
Right.
Before the New Deal, it was not the role of government to make your life better. No one said that. Oh, wait, I shouldn't say no one said that, but that was not the mainstream idea.
Right.
It was the New Deal which adopted that social democratic position, because that's who held that position, the social democrats, who said that government could be used to make life better for working people, even under capitalism. That is the essential theory of social democrats, people like Mondami. That's what they believe. That's what they're fighting for. Trump may want to call them communists, but communists think that you can't improve people's lives under capitalism. You have to get rid of capitalism. Social democrats believe you can improve people's lives under capitalism, and that's what you should strive for.
And Jake, that's one of, I think, the differences that we're seeing today, where we have the social democrats, because some of them have come out and said that they're out and out communists.
Well, that, okay, if they've said that, then that's what they are. But the policy that they're standing on, the policy that they're trying to implement, and the policy of most of them is a social democratic policy. It's the policy that animated the New Deal. And by the way, it's the policy that was very common in the minority in the United States. The mayor of Scranton, the most popular mayor of Scranton, the guy who served them as mayor longer than any other mayor up until just a couple of years ago, was a
T.B.
19th
Powderly.
Powderly, right? A member of the American Socialist Movement. Absolutely. Yeah.
What was it, the IWW, the
Well,
lobby?
no, he wasn't a member of the IWW. That was a different group, that they were not social democrats. They believed in revolution. But that the social democrats who did not believe in revolution did believe in ameliorating workers' lives for the better by using government and putting restrictions on corporations. And he was the mayor of Scranton. There's a statue to him right in back of City Hall, of the courthouse. Not in back of City Hall, back of the courthouse in Courthouse Square. And he went on to serve in Wilson's cabinet. He was not a very progressive guy, by the way. Being a social democrat doesn't automatically make you progressive. The Socialist Party, the biggest social democratic party the country has seen, which elected, I don't know, hundreds of representatives, mayors, and what have you, was also racist. They were they were anti-Asians. They supported the Chinese Exclusion Act. Their great hero, literary hero, Jack London, was an out-and-out racist in that respect. So
The Chinese were always the ones that they were afraid of, but
yeah,
the,
the Yellow Peril.
until they needed them to build the
Yes,
railroads
exactly. Exactly.
or to run the laundries in San Francisco.
Yeah. But when people now are shocked, oh, look, there's a social democratic surge in New York, but it's limited to New York. Oh, no, now it's in Colorado. Oh, my God, it's in Colorado. Oh, look, the mayor of this Washington, D.C. The mayors in Wisconsin and Minneapolis, there were mayors there for 30, 40 years who were socialists in the 20th century. There is a persistent social democratic stream. And there's also a persistent communist stream in United States political history.
And a persistent neo-fascist
And there is
stream.
that too. That's right. That's right. America First was the great fascist slogan of the 20th century. And it was a pro-Nazi slogan.
And it's
That is
back.
how that's how they and it is back. That's right.
And it is back. And a little trying to be slightly subtle, but more subtle about it. But we've seen that. We had that idea that Trump had with the spread eagle,
Yes,
that
the eagle
kind of,
on the gate, all right, on his arc of victory.
which,
That's right.
well, interestingly, well, there's two. There's one on top, and then there's one on something else that he had that would be on the bottom of something. And that one only had 11 stars on it, which is matched the number of states in the Confederacy. You know, interest, you know, people do notice these things, but a lot of people don't on there.
Well, if you don't study history, and if you live in right. Texas and in Florida, you're not going to be studying history. You're never going to know these things.
Well, you're going to be studying the history that they want, or the Bible. I mean, they want to...
Which, by the way, the Bible is not a history book. It wasn't written as a history book. It wasn't intended as a history book. It wasn't looked upon as a history book. It's not history.
Well, they're trying to defend it now as literature.
Right.
But it's interesting. It's only the Christian, the Protestant version of that literature that they're talking about. They're not talking about some of the great works from Asia or from other cultures that could also be quoted.
Well, didn't Secretary Hegseth said all these other religions are garbage? Didn't he use that word?
Well, he's treated them as such.
Yeah, right.
He's treated them as such. So, yeah.
And he wasn't doing that because he's an atheist.
No. No. You know, you mentioned Colorado. We had the upset of a 15-term congresswoman there.
Right, right.
Which, of course, in some ways, that hurts the seniority that would be able to bring if the Democrats get back to power. But there was also a couple of other things happening in Colorado. The sitting senator, Bennett, who decided to run for governor, got beat by the attorney general.
And by the way, Bennett was not just a senator. He's a big shot, right?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the issue wasn't really much philosophically. It's just that the attorney general said, I'm going to be more aggressive against the Republicans, against Trump. I've already brought X number of lawsuits against them. And Bennett had approved of some of the cabinet members. So the Democrats want people who are willing to fight, not necessarily have to be a Democratic Socialist, but they want people who are going to fight and say, we're going to try different things.
That's right.
There.
Right.
Now, somebody who isn't fighting is the current Colorado governor, who not only commuted the sentence of the woman who...
Tina Peters.
Tina Peters, who tried to, you know, play games with the ballots and did not protect their...
she turned over the code. She turned over the codes. Yeah. To some Trump people who were trying to make the case that that the election was compromised, and by turning them over, she compromised the election.
Right, and then it came out that the parole board, which makes recommendations, had twice, not once but twice, voted unanimously not to release her early, or give her clemency, or parole, or pardon. And so what Paulus did was he fired two of the people on the board. Technically, he's right that he shouldn't be leaking that, but it shows, got awful sensitive about the criticism. Although he's the lamest of lame ducks at this point, I guess.
Technically, he's right, but actually he's wrong.
Right. We see a lot of that.
By the way, that's an important, it's very interesting, because Judge, you were speaking earlier about the fact that the Republican majority on the Supreme Court has nothing to do with precedent unless precedent supports them. When it supports them, then they go along with it.
Yeah.
If it doesn't support them, they don't go along with it. Well, that's Justice Thomas's point of view. Justice Thomas says precedent is all well and good, but what if a decision was wrong to begin with? Why should it stand? Why shouldn't you junk it when you have the power to junk it? Because it was wrong to begin with. Now, the only problem with that is, what's right and what's wrong? How do you decide? Who decides? They'll decide, but what's right. The basis for deciding? Because take this situation. I employ you. I'd like to pay you nothing. You'd like to get a lot of money. Who's right and who's wrong? We're both right. But who prevails? Whoever's stronger. That's, right and wrong doesn't enter into it. Strength is what enters into it.
Who has the leverage?
Who has Donald the leverage? That's exactly right.
Yeah. Listen, we've got to mention, we've mentioned Colorado and other places. We got to mention here in Lackawanna County, because there is a struggle for power, and there's a struggle for democracy. Within
and
the
and
Democratic
you're, Party. You're involved in it, right?
Yeah, within the Democratic Party. And what had happened was that there was a new vote for committee people who would elect the county chairman. The current county chairman has finally said he's not running for election, Chris Patrick. And there's an insurgent group, and Chris Patrick, as one of his last acts, sent letters out to 76 of them and said, you are no longer on the committee because you violated our bylaws, because you supported independent candidates against Democratic endorsed candidates. And the insurgent group sued. That suit is still pending. They got an injunction. The vote was supposed to happen next week. However, in steps the State Democratic Party. And the State Democratic Party said, not so fast, anybody. According to the rules, after a primary, there's only a certain amount of time that they have to reorganize. And that time lapsed on June 24th. And because it lapsed, we no longer have a chairman or officers. They're out. They can't make these decisions to fire people or to dismiss people from the committee. We're going to run the election, meaning the state, Gene DePasquale, the new chairman. He also said this for Franklin County as well. We're going to run the elections. And once the new board is elected, the new officers are elected, we'll step away. So there was a sort of a victory meeting held during the week at in Scranton at one of the bars, and they had a big crowd. They had about 150 people, including a bunch of the county commissioner gone and a couple of the state reps showed up. Chris Kelly from the Scranton Times was there, and they're rare in the fight. Now, they haven't won yet. We don't know who else is going to put their name in for the chairmanship, but we'll see on that. One person who wasn't there was Marty Flynn, state senator, who was vehemently opposed to Lexi Kelly, who's from the Abington Dems, who said she's definitely running for chairman.
And so, is Patrick, the outgoing chair, and his group, are they people supporting the Democratic candidate for Congress, Paige Cognetti?
I'm not sure. I think they are. But, you know, saying their support and what they give in support are two different things.
Exactly. Well, we're done for this year. That is to say, this the 250th week, year.
The 250th year, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And, by the way, there's a billboard out. I think it's a Republican sponsor one talking about gangs in Scranton against Paige Cognetti. If that's the best they have against her, they're trying everything. They got money to spend on this, so we'll see what happens.
But it's a tight race, right? It's neck and neck.
It's a 2-point race right now, according to the polls.
Yeah. All right.
We'll track.
We'll see you next year at the beginning of year number 251.
And congratulations to General Meade, who won that battle in Gettysburg.
Congratulations, General Meade. All right.
Okay.
And Congress did not get, I mean, Washington did not get invaded by the southern states.
That is true.
Right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.